while I did make mention that as a school classroom teacher, I heard that excuse quite often from my students. I did a little run through, and it is indeed true. This clock is a bit fast, so we're pretty close to committee start time, so we'll begin. Members, today, what we're going to do is close the loop on a series of learnings that we have gone through here in the committee. And if I could just summarize, this is what I look at as day five of this series of learnings. And we began the first part of this series simply looking at the changes that Minnesota has been undergoing in its demographics. We had a real good discussion on those changes and what are the implications of those changes to K-12 education. The next day in this series, we heard from really what I'd call change agents, people who have been in the legislature, in state government, in agencies at some form, and have been involved in really looking at and actually implementing systemic changes. And we followed that then with just hearing from the department and hearing from the Center for School Change on how many people are accessing the system changes that we've had and having a discussion around that. Day four was our site visits that I'd like to have a little conversation about right away this morning and hear from the different groups about what you saw, what you learned, and things you can share with the members around the table about the different sites that you visited. And then today, to bring this full circle and close this loop on systemic changes in education in Minnesota is to hear from the people most affected in these changes, and that is the parents, the students, and the teachers, and that'll close the loop. We are going to hear bills in this committee. I know some people are kind of wondering, are we ever going to hear any bills? Yes, we will. And that'll be what we're moving on to next. But I think it's very appropriate for us to have a good grounding in where our system is right now. We have a quorum at this time, so I'm going to officially call the meeting to order. But today, as I said, the first thing I'd like to do is just have a chat about the different sites that we visited and what your experiences were. So, who'd like to kick off this discussion? Representative Grywin, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was one of the ones who went to Cyber Village, and I was very impressed with that school. You know, we all are reinforced when we visit a school like that a small caring environment where everybody knows everybody is a really good environment for kids, and they seem to have, and we were there, I think, to notice the technology, but we also noticed that the kids were often described by the principal, at least, and that was my observation too, kids who might be lost, more apt to be lost in the shuffle in the regular school, and they were doing very well there. So those advocates for small schools, I think we had a good case history of it. And then beyond that, the technology and the flexibility for students to go to school just 2 days a week and then be home and on their computer the rest of the time, where they could feel non-threatened by peers or even staff to ask any question they wanted via the computer, which we legislators are very familiar with, how that unintimidates people to, you know, be more forthright, you know, when you send an email rather than have to be faced by a whole group of other human beings while having those kind of communications. So that may be good and bad, but I thought the school as, you know, a choice, an alternative for, you know, the kinds of families and kids that would care to choose that was very impressive, and I was glad to have a chance, having driven by there many times, to get to see it. So thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you. Anyone else who went to Cyber Village want to comment on their experience?
Can I ask a question, Mr. Chair?
Representative Quincy.
Is the Cyber Village, I didn't get to go there, is that a charter school?
Representative Grywin? Would you like to just share with us a little bit about Cyber? It's a charter school, right?
Right.
And how does it work? Did you get into that a little bit? You said 3 days they're at home, 2 days
right.
they're at the facility.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clunzian, sorry I was talking so I didn't hear the full question, but others may want to join in who were there. I know Representative Saylor was there, and who else was there? Representative Demmer, and I think Representative Latz, Representative Mariani, and who else did we have there?
I only drove. Let's see.
Representative Marquardt?
Yeah.
Representative Marquardt. Thank you. Yes. Anyway, it was a nice to have a small setting for legislators, too, because we could ask the questions we wanted without all our peers taking up the time. So that was good for us, too. But it was a school where kids could go. I think they called it the East and West sections or something like that, North and South, where they went. East and West Bank. There's Representative Latz.
Mm-hmm.
They could choose either the first 2 days or the second 2 days, and then the population of students the other 3 days was at home, you know, working on assignments. They were very project-oriented, they said, even when they were at school. They were doing kind of holistic learning and trying to learn lots of skills while working on projects. They were making boxes, writing books. They had a lot of visual displays. They also had the Spanish language was kind of, the way I gathered, every student, kind of mastered that. So Representative Mariani was thrilled about that. And as we all were, they had, white Anglo-Saxon families with their pictures of their families, and then their stories were written in very good Spanish, my rudimentary trying to remember back to my days of taking Spanish. I was impressed with their fluency in writing in their displays. So that was maybe others who were there want to join in as well.
Representative Tamer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I was at Cyber Village also. Got the pleasure to drive. Actually, I was the taxi driver, and I might add that Representative Marquardt is an excellent navigator, except for the two or three mistakes we made on the way there, but we won't talk about those. Is he here?
I was not.
Yes. Yeah, Representative Saylor was with us, too, and she was helping. She was helping from the back seat. I won't say anything more about that. Cyber Village is an interesting place. It's actually a St. Paul charter, a Minneapolis charter school located in St. Paul. They talked about the issues they had with relocating and that sort of thing. Catering, as Representative Greiling said, to have, the East and West Bank concept, they have 2 days they're in the building and the other 3 days of the week. They have a Monday, Tuesday, and a Wednesday, Thursday group. And the other 3 days of the week, they're at home learning. When they're home learning, there's a requirement you agree that there's always an adult present at home when you're working on your computer. A lot of disabled kids, I understand, they do have a program like HELP, home and hospital-bound type thing, where there's some that physically can't get there ever, and they have a person that coordinates that. I think their staff was, seven people, seven teachers and administrator? And sounds like they do a lot with disabled kids or kids who the at home learning, the off site learning really works well for. I think Representative Grading hit on the rest of it. Kind of reminds us as we go back and forth. So,
Representative Grading,
thank you. One more big point, and maybe Ms. Representative Latz wants to cover it, so he can, or Representative Saylor, but one of you maybe could talk about the homeschool transition component, because that was interesting too.
All right. Representative Peterson, you have a question?
Well, I wanted to follow up a little bit. At the homeschooling, is this for homeschoolers? And who gets the funding? Is this in Minneapolis? I mean, who gets the per pupil funding on an issue like this?
Mm-hmm.
Because there are homeschoolers.
Mr. Chair, I would defer and let others take a turn.
Right. Representative Files.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, the... like all the charter schools, the funding follows the pupils, so the money goes directly to the charter school. It was originally chartered as a Minneapolis charter school, still is, they did have a location in Minneapolis, but they had to relocate and they couldn't find space that was cheap enough and met their needs in Minneapolis. So they opened up the campus in St. Paul, but for a long time they had kept the campus in Minneapolis. Over the last several years, when the accounting shifts were done as part of the budget solution, postponing payments to schools, it put about $150,000 hole in the budget of this school, and to save that money they had to close their campus that was in Minneapolis. So now they're entirely in St. Paul. It also reduced the number of students that were there, which reduced the funding for the school. They now have a capacity of about 180 students. They're at about 131 students right now. In terms of the homeschooling component, what they have found is that a lot of families that homeschool their kids do fine up until third grade, second grade, third grade, somewhere in there. But right around there, the kids start accelerating or getting to the point they're beyond the parents' capability of homeschooling them any further. They've reached the parents' knowledge level in terms of some of the basic stuff, or the demands are just too much. And the parents are looking for an opportunity to transition their kids back into the public schools. This is a good way to do that because it's partly at on the campus, it's partly at home. The curriculum is all taken care of by the school. And then a lot of them, they go straight from, this is a fourth to eighth grade program, they go from there into the ninth grade public school program in their district.
Representative Flats, when we say that it's a Minneapolis charter, does that mean that Minneapolis is the sponsor?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
All right. Question for...
And I'm sorry, to add on to that point, too, in terms of teacher compensation, it's an interesting point. They are lockstep with the Minneapolis teachers. They do not deviate. They're not union, and they are not bound by the Minneapolis teachers' contract, but they follow the teachers' contract in Minneapolis to the letter in terms of compensation and everything. So it takes that issue off the plate, and then they concentrate on other aspects of the school administration.
A quick question for Ms. Larson. Ms. Larson, we know that school districts can sponsor charter schools. Is there anything in law that says you can only sponsor charter schools that are actually within the confines of your district? No. Okay. So any school district can sponsor a charter school anywhere in the state, basically, according to law.
Representative, the Rockford School District sponsors the Skills for Tomorrow charter school in Minneapolis.
Interesting. Representative Saylor.
I was impressed by the technology that they had in so many cases, and also, as Representative Demmer said, about the opportunities for students that were ill and not able to physically make it into a school setting. One thing I did note also to remark on is just that they were really challenged, as any school is, many schools anyway, are for their facilities. You know, the gym, as they said, this is our gym. And also the fact that they were meeting the challenge of doing science without a wet lab. That if they had to use water, they had to go into a kitchen area. And I just felt that the teachers really were, we didn't observe that a science class, but I could see where they would be challenged in doing that, just like so many schools.
Mm-hmm. All right, any further comments on Cyber Village, Representative Flats?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, one other very unique component to Cyber Village is that they are a national model, a national resource for online learning and education. Mm-hmm. They have a special agreement with Microsoft and with some other software companies, where they're actually the beta test site for a redevelopment of some online curriculum and interactive communication programming, so that not only have they had the benefit of having a lot of their computer components paid for by these corporations, but they have, because of their pioneering role, they provide two things. One is they are a resource for districts around the state, for schools around the country, in fact, and including in New Zealand, which is looking very seriously at their model and adopting that model countrywide. And secondly, they can provide a turnkey operation for any school district that wants to provide this kind of an online learning environment, or especially dealing with the homebound students in their own particular school districts, for $30, I think it was it per month per student, or $3 per year per student, a very nominal fee. Any other school district could access Cyber Village's tools online and provide all of the educational components right there. Most of their hardware is actually located off-site at the Visi.com ISP site. And so it was a very unique computer-based program that they're nationally recognized for.
Thank you for that. You know, just a personal perspective, I think one of the things that we should probably talk about and have a discussion about was one of the charges of what, excuse me, members, if you have conversations and you need to have those take place, you know, I appreciate that, but at the table it gets a little distracting. Sorry. I think one of the things that is what that needs to be addressed is the exporting of what is being learned at charter schools. I think that was one of the original rationale for creating the charter movement, was to try different things and then export those ideas. All right? And so I think it's good to hear that Cyber Village is indeed doing that. All right? To what extent and can we look at policies which would improve the ability of all charter schools to export the good things they're doing, I think is probably a good policy discussion at some time also. Right. Representative Peterson, you had another question?
I just wanted to follow up a little bit. Since these are, you know, some of them are homeschoolers, some of them are disabled students who cannot maybe get to the site. Is there any requirement with homeschooling in terms of policy about a minimum number of days in a school site, or do they get the full per diem for being at home? And does this kind of change the whole way we look at homeschooling? I'm just curious.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Black,
if I might, I think there's a misunderstanding. These kids are no longer homeschooled.
Oh.
They may have been up until third grade, but once they're in this program, they are part of the regular school system. The per diem goes to Cyber Village. They are home for 3 days of the week, but so are all of the students in Cyber Village, except those that are specifically homebound or hospital-bound because of their physical disabilities. But they're no longer being homeschooled in the sense of other homeschoolers in Minnesota. They are students in the school district now.
So they are public school students. Fundamentally. Representative Greiling, you want to follow up on that?
Chair, Representative Peterson, and some of, a lot of them, they said, were transitionary. They went from homeschool to this school, and then they could go on to a regular school, but it was just kind of too much to go from homeschool to the hustle and bustle of a mega middle school or high school, and especially when a lot of them were being homeschooled in the first place because they, you know, kind of didn't fit in as well at the regular school. Another thing I just wanted to note that I thought of just now that I think we need to always be cognizant of when we discuss vouchers or anything of that sort, and that was that the high-need special ed kids were not welcome at this school. They said, the principal acknowledged that, we just don't have the special education staff here, and we can't accommodate them. They just don't get the help that they need here, and so he said, we are so far staying out of legal trouble, because nobody has sued us for not taking their kid, because we haven't quite said, no, we won't take you, but they counsel them out of coming, and they make it clear to the parents that their child's needs will not be met here, and then so far that's worked. But, you know, I think we always need to be aware of that when we talk about choice things, that those really high-need kids, the really expensive ones, when we talk about funding in the Finance Committee as well, will more than likely always reside in the public schools, the mega public schools, as opposed to the small choices, just because of economy of scale for those high-cost kids.
Good point. Let's move on to another school. Let's hear from the folks who visited the Guadalupe Area Project. Okay. Would anyone who went to that site like to begin? Representative Sikora.
First, I'll comment on the directions that the computer gave us. It was Mike. I'm trying to remember who was all with us that day.
But anyway.
Representative Secor, I think our former governor talked about the street layout in the city of St. Paul, but...
I am... You know, maybe I don't go that far, Representative, but, you know, when it tells you to go, take a U-E right afterwards and go back the other way, and back the other way is the wrong way. That got us in a little bit of trouble. But anyway, I found it very interesting, and the kids that they are working with are, you know, seem to be doing quite well. And a couple that we met personally and visited with, one of them is homeless and comes from a shelter every day. He's, I think, 17. And then a young woman, and both her parents have been in and out of prison, you know, various times. So, you know, these kids haven't had a great background, and yet they are doing quite well in school. So I was rather impressed with that. And one of the things I noticed that we really need to address is the way they set up their programs in order for these students to get some sense of kind of like family, is they have, you know, certain teachers who work with the same group of kids most of the time, which means they're teaching several different subjects. And I think this is something we need to think about and deal with, because we don't really, currently, we don't have a way. They've been wavered. We don't really have a way that we license teachers who are working with that kind of a group. I think we've got to do something for the alternative learning centers to address that issue. It's very similar to what we hear from the very small schools in rural Minnesota, really. Mm-hmm. They just can't hire a teacher for every subject for every level because... What did they have? Do you remember how many kids?
135.
Mm-hmm. Between 130 and 150.
Right. Kent was there, too.
Uh-huh. So. Representative Thorne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Demmer mentioned he was the taxi driver for his group. I wanted to thank Representative Olson for the tour of the 3 square miles around the destination site. But I don't want to thank him too profusely because I was the navigator. So then we started to follow Representative Secor, and that was, it was a very interesting visit, members, and it was an alternative program, one of, I want to say, 15 in the Metropolitan, that belonged to the Metropolitan Alternative Federation program. And it did deal with students who had just had extreme difficulty really were the criteria, I think, for going to the alternative school. Extensive truancy, major discipline problems, even expulsion, students who were behind grade. What I observed, not only from the two students, but when we went on the tour, I saw students waiting to go to class who were late, who were sitting comfortably and really unsupervised in the commons area waiting for their class. Students waiting, at points they were gathered because we went between classes, and students were waiting, very, very peaceably and seemed, ready to learn, although they were, they would have taken a snow day, they told me, if they could get one. But, so they were still kids. What struck me was that also, in kind of getting an overview of the tape that they showed us of Guadalupe, was sort of the was the same theme really that Representative Greiling mentioned, was these were kids who were lost in the shuffle, and the reference that really struck me was that they had come from schools where there were too many students and too few teachers, and in some of the classes that I observed, I counted 6 or 7 kids waiting for a science teacher. I mean, they really were getting the kind of attention and hands-on individual or the opportunity for that kind of learning, and they seem to be flourishing. We did ask if they had tracking outcomes in terms of what happened afterwards. I don't recall that. I mean, I think they had some, but they said they were hard to track just because of some of the circumstances from which they came. The question that occurred to me that I asked them about was, what could they tell us about I don't know what the phrase is to use, but the 1 or 2 years before they got to the area school. Because I know myself as a classroom teacher who has seen students come and go from many different programs or go and not come back or you know, whatever, that there's a story there too, I think, in terms of this shuffle that students get lost in, and the amount of I just wondered how many problems, how many challenges, how many people, how all of the things that they went through, and I thought it would be good for me not to lose track of that fact that certainly one of the things I think that's my goal by coming here is to do a better job with the shuffle, to do a better job with what's happening just in the mainstream in terms of the opportunities, because to a certain extent, if there were more opportunity for fewer students to the ratio of more teachers in terms of some of those programs, maybe some of the costs of what they went through personally and educationally and socially, we could reduce some of those. So I thought the front end of the story was one that they really couldn't tell me much about, and I didn't get a chance to really ask the kids. But that struck me of the program also.
Representative Thorne, we will have some students in front of us today, and maybe we'll have the opportunity to have those kind of conversations. Anyone else who went to Guadalupe who'd like to add? Representative Rude.
I would also echo what Mindy said earlier. This school grew out of the social justice movement in the 60s, and actually some of the kids were there because the parents chose to put them there, too. That one mom who was there, they felt very strongly about the nurturing environment that was provided at the school. Representative Ellison's wife is actually a teacher there, and that was a pleasure to have her give us the tour. A couple things, and Representative Dorn, perhaps you can correct me if I'm wrong in this, but we were talking to her about the teacher's contract, and I believe she said they try to keep it commensurate with the St. Paul teachers, is that correct?
Yeah, that's my understanding.
And I thought that was an interesting thing. The other thing is it seemed like a wonderful school. Overall, it was fabulous. But they were a little stumped when we asked them about their graduation rate. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to track because they have kids coming in and out. And that threw them, I think, a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little hard to really give the accountability piece as far as how successful they are in that particular measure.
Okay. Is this some food for thought, Representative Sikora?
Just one other thing. These are schools that the city of Minneapolis, the district of Minneapolis, contracts with. These aren't specifically public schools in that sense. They are contract schools. Mm-hmm. And the district must feel that makes more sense than setting up some of their own schools. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And the other striking thing is, we've spent a lot of, I think, time and effort and dollars pushing small schools to consolidate,
mm-hmm.
because we didn't think they could provide what the choices students needed. And, maybe... I hate to think that maybe we spent a lot of money going the wrong direction, especially since all the research now is saying smaller schools are better schools.
Representative Heide Gerken? I did notice, Representative Heide Gerken, that they mentioned one administrator per seven teachers. I started grinning. what we'll do now, committee, is we'll have experiences from those who visited Avalon and from those who visited Highland Park Elementary Magnet School after we have we hear from our guests who are here today. All right? And so we'll conclude the meeting with having our discussion on those two sites. Today we have with us people who are actually living in these public school choice programs, right? And like I said, it's kind of a wrap to this whole learning piece that we've been undergoing, is to hear from the people who are actually there, and an opportunity, Representative Dorn, to ask the questions, and maybe I hope they don't mind some tough questions, but the biggest, I guess, is to question why. Right. Why we make the choices that we make, right? And so that we as policymakers can think about how we, the decisions we make can affect one way or the other the ability for people to continue to have these types of choices. So today I thought what we would do is start. We have a parent here of a student who is at the Avalon School. All right, Miss Joy Sorensen. Miss Sorensen, if you would, take a seat. Welcome. All right, and you have some comments to make, and then we'll ask some questions of you. Welcome again.
Thank you, Chairman Biskins, members of the Education Policy and Reform Committee. My name is Joy Sorensen Navarre. I live at 330 King Street West in St. Paul's West Side neighborhood. My husband and I have raised 6 children. We are deeply appreciative to live in Minnesota, a state with a long tradition in investment in public education, a state that believes in creating opportunities to meet the varied needs of its students. We are very proud of our children. Their journeys have not been easy. 2 of our children have disabilities. 3 have been involved in the juvenile justice system. 2 are in recovery from chemical dependency. And today, all of them are high school graduates, are on track for graduation. A primary reason that they're thriving today is because they found school options that met their needs. One of my sons is a Guadalupe Area Project graduate. He got lost in the public school system until he found Guadalupe when he was 17. He stuck in there, and when he was 20 years old, he graduated from GAP. But the story I want to share today is about our youngest child. He's a junior at Avalon High School in St. Paul. It's a public charter school on University Avenue. I gave 5 brochures from the school to the administrator, and so those of you that didn't get a chance to visit, feel free to look it over. Our son is twice exceptional. He has amazing intellectual gifts, and he has a disability that disrupts his learning. He attended public schools, Adams Spanish Immersion Elementary School and Murray Junior High School, with excellent special education staff. He won awards in the state science fair. He was active in music and sports. He wanted to go to college to become a materials engineer with a specialty in welding. But in high school, he lost his way. The traditional high school path did not work for him. He started to fail. He tried and tried and tried. I tried to help the educators and the school administrators, and even the district special ed administrators tried to help. He began to believe that he was a failure. He decided he wasn't smart enough to go to college. Then he decided he wasn't even smart enough to graduate from high school. He stopped caring about school. He got into trouble. He stopped caring about living. He ended up in the hospital. And then we found Avalon. Avalon is a small, project-based public charter school. Deeply apologetic for such an emotional part of my life. Avalon School gave my son his future back. Avalon expects great things from its students, each in their own unique way. As a sophomore at Avalon, my son rebuilt a 1972 JT2 motorcycle from 2 scrapped motorcycles he found in a junkyard. After the tragedies at the River Bluff caves last year, he researched the history and geology of the caves and came up with his own informed decision about what the city should do to reduce risks to those involved in spelunking. Our son and many other students who have lost their way in traditional public schools are thriving at Avalon. He goes to school every day. He's inspired to learn. He's getting good grades. He reaches out to his underclassmates, and he's thinking about the future again. Last week, we even toured the engineering program at Winona State University. So I'm just here to tell my story and to ask you to please continue to invest in effective education in public charter schools that meet the needs of all of our kids and will create a better future and community for all of us.
Thank you, Ms. Sorensen. Other questions, Representative Sikora?
Thank you, and thank you, Ms. Sorensen. Can you say, what do you think was the main difference? Was it the size? Was it the type of teachers, the classmates? What was it that really made the difference for your son that where Avalon was different from his other experiences?
Ms. Sorensen.
Thank you. Representative Sikora. In all of his school experiences, he found amazing teachers and caring adults. The difference for my son was a system that was flexible to see him who he was as an individual learner and to allow him to learn in the way that was most effective for him.
Ms. Sorensen, a project-based school allows great flexibility for a student to choose what they're going to learn. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
Any concerns that you had going in about when he is quote-unquote finished? Will he even be ready for college? Did you have any of those concerns?
Avalon prides itself as a school that works towards helping their students achieve their goals. For many students, it is they're college-bound. For others, they have other kinds of goals. But that's one of the primary focuses of the school, so I wasn't as concerned about that. Honestly, I was concerned with project-based learning. Would he be, like, wasting his time? Would he, you know, could he get himself focused enough to actually learn something? And he has ended up being so inspired and motivated by things that are of interest to him that that hasn't turned out to be much of a worry as I had originally thought.
Okay. Are there other questions? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Sorensen, thank you very much for sharing your story. And I visited Avalon, and I can readily understand how you feel, because I sense that there are some really good things happening there for the students that attend. One of the questions that I came away from that experience wondering about is how parents and students kind of make the choice and how they find out about these options. Did you have any help in identifying the different schools that your children might be able to pursue their education in, or did you have to do it on your own?
Ms. Sorensen.
Chair. Excellent question. We just bumped into Avalon School. We have a homework coach that was helping my son who did some research online, and she ran into the school online and was intrigued, went and did a visit, and told us that we should really think about it. This was at the crisis point in our lives. And so we checked out. But you know, I'm imagining there's jewels of schools, these small charter schools that people just aren't aware of or perhaps don't realize how they could be an excellent fit for their children or their families. I don't know the solution to that. I'd perhaps look to this committee to help with some of those questions.
Representative,
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if anybody can answer this question. If there is some support service out there in the community to help parents or students identify choices that they might want to pursue.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't speak for St. Paul, Representative Lanning. Minneapolis, if you go to the website now, has actually a very good school choice selector software that gives you a list of all the schools in the city, allows you to tick off the ones you're interested in, and then gives you detail about their ELL populations, test scores, students in poverty, programs, you know, drilling down to specifically which ones offer girls in engineering and math and which ones offer as an after-school activity and which ones offer dance as an et cetera, et cetera. Additionally, Minneapolis holds a school choice fair early January each year. I've gone the past 2 years where both all of the K-8 schools are there. They do two, one for K-8 and one for high school. But not only are the K-8 schools there, but also the charter schools, the alternative schools, and the suburban schools that are part of the Choice Is Yours court-sanctioned program are also at least invited to be there. I know there were some empty tables with school signs up from, I believe, some of the charter schools, but they have the option or the opportunity to be there. So they're at least within Minneapolis. I can't, again, speak to St. Paul. There are at least some avenues, both online and in person.
And I'm getting a nod from Representative Mariani that very similar set up in St. Paul also. One of the things, Representative Davney, I was aware of the Choice Fair because of a write-up in the Star Tribune that followed it. And it was a very nice write-up, except I did bristle at one comment, and in fact, I have it memorized, all right, when it said that the charter school booths were not as well visited as the public school booths. Hmm. Right? And you just kind of, well, wait a second, charter schools are public schools. And so to try and we'll have a little education moving forward on that issue there. Right? Are there any other, Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Chair Biskins. I did have another question, but I'll hold off on that. But now that we have a more active choice department at the department, wouldn't they have the obligation to ensure that school districts have access to the brochures, to the persons on board at the department to answer Representative Lanning's question? And maybe we should put a little pressure on them to ensure that there's more visibility for these options for parents. So, you know, we're starting out, but maybe we need a little more.
Representative Severson.
Just to that point, Mr. Chair, I was out eating last night just up on Lexington, and as I walked out the door, I saw probably a 3/4-inch thick publication that was put out evidently by the school district or the city that had school choices. So it looked like, to me, I was going to grab one, and then I thought, well, somebody else probably needs more than I do, but there were probably a stack of 4 or 5 of them. But it was interesting to me that right there in a public place that they had placed some information on choices for schools.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Sorensen, thank you very much for being here today and sharing your story. Appreciate it. This time I'd like to have the three students we have in the audience. If you'd all come down together, right, and Toby will find another chair we can add. So we have three students who are here from three different choice options, and it's a pleasure to have you here with us today. So if we could start off by introducing yourself and telling us which school you go to, and then so your name, which school. We'll just have all three of you do that real quick, and then we'll move in one at a time your testimony for today. And then when you're done, the committee will have questions, all right, for you to field.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Amalia Armendariz. I go to El Colegio Charter School, which is in South Minneapolis.
Good morning, representatives. My name is Emily Bombach. I go to Highland Park Elementary, International Baccalaureate Primary Year School.
Good morning. My name is Danielle Dreamer, and I attend Prairie Center Alternative in Eno Prairie.
Welcome. Welcome, ladies, to all three of you. Who would like to begin with their statements today?
Thank you, Chair and Representatives. I have a whole speech prepared, so would you guys like to hear it?
Fabulous.
Okay. What is alternative education? Is it an easier way to get your diploma? No. Is it a guaranteed A on your transcript? No. Is it where all the bad kids end up going? No. Is it one of the best decisions I ever made for my life? Yes. My name is Danielle Dreamer, and I attend Prairie Center Alternative. Before I chose to transfer to PCA, I was into drugs and partying and hanging out with the wrong crowd and never going to school. I skipped class at every opportunity and was constantly running away from my home and my problems. I had absolutely no ambition or motivation to go to school or to succeed in life. Prairie Center Alternative changed all that. The teachers and staff instilled a drive in me that I never thought possible. I came to PCA in the fall of 2002, and I originally thought it was going to be an easy way to get my diploma or an easy A on my transcript, but I could not have been more wrong. PCA not only challenged me academically, but also mentally and emotionally. The teachers at PCA are not just teachers. They are miracle workers. They don't just teach. They motivate and inspire. In my home high school, I felt like I was just a number and that I wasn't treated as a real person. I didn't feel like the teachers ever really cared about me. They just cared if I actually got to class on time so I wouldn't interrupt their lecture. But at PCA, the teachers really tried to develop an understanding of not just the student's learning style, but of how they are as a person. I think that is one of the best aspects of PCA. I feel as though if I have a problem, there's not one teacher that would not sit down and talk to me and give me advice and listen. I think it takes a very special person to hold that quality. Alternative education, I don't think, is for everyone. That is why it's called alternative education. It's alternative choices and alternative learning. Some students can go through mainstream high schools without a problem, but there are many who struggle at some point or another. Some have learning disabilities, some have trouble taking tests, and some have trouble with the large workload they have to take on. But whatever the case may be, there should always be a place where someone can go to get help. I was fortunate enough to find a place that could help me. In conclusion, PCA is my past, my present, and my future, and I'll always hold its experience true to my heart. Thank you.
Thank you, Danielle. Emily, would you like to go next?
Yes, please. My name is Emily Bombach. I am a sixth grade student at Highland Park Elementary International Baccalaureate Primary Year School. I'm very nervous to be here, but I'm also honored to be here as well. I've been invited to inform you about my wonderful school. Our school is special because we have the opportunity to be involved in a program called the Primary Years Program, or PYP. We have worked for over 4 years to be called a PYP school. When we finally became a PYP school, we knew all of our hard work had paid off because we became the first international baccalaureate primary year school in Minnesota. If we are a PYP school, we are also PYP students. When I first came to this school, I didn't know what a PYP student was. I quickly learned with the help of my teachers what it meant to be a PYP student. We strive to be the best we can be and do the best we can. We set our goals using the PYP profiles and attitudes, which remind us of what an international PYP student really is. Some of our PYP profiles and attitudes are reflective, confidence, commitment, risk-taker, respect, and tolerance. All of them, including the others, are also profiles of leader, and that is what PYP students are. They are leaders. I chose to attend the school because I heard how great it was and how they were working towards being a PYP school, which I also heard was a great program. This school motivates me to learn because of the way the teachers teach. I prefer to think of teaching as enriching or enrichment. We don't sit and read out of textbooks all day, like some schools do. We have certain subjects that we learn about through our units of inquiry every year. They allow us to engage in activities, have fun, and learn at the same time. Textbooks and chalkboards don't do that. At my previous school, we didn't have that learning opportunity. We were just taught. If we didn't understand something, the teachers didn't take the time to go over the lesson or make sure we understood. As long as the lesson was taught, it didn't matter. Through my years at Highland, I have noticed that the teachers here are either like a friend or not your friend at all. Unless you are one of the children who has misbehaved, the teachers are pretty much all our friends. I believe that school is for anyone and everyone. The purpose of school is to learn and remember through experiences what you have learned. The next step is to use what you have learned. Everyone has a chance to do that. My parents really like this school. Some of the time, they are frustrated with certain things, but they still like school. My parents are happy that I have really great friends and really great teachers.
If I could change anything about my school, I would make sure we had more money so we can do extra things and have more supplies. If my mom could change anything, she would probably want us to have uniforms so I don't have to worry about the clothing I wear. I would like to thank all of you for listening to my speech. I am, once again, honored to be here and testify on behalf of my school. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. Amelia.
Well, where do I begin? I'm from Texas. I went to a private school in there. And then I came up here a few years ago, went to a public school, St. Louis Park High School, and now I have the opportunity to be in a charter school. So basically, I've experienced almost every single type of education there is, except for homeschool. Well, public school in St. Louis Park was, well, I thought I was doing okay. I wasn't doing okay. My first report card, ninth grade, I had mostly C's and D's. My sophomore year, I had mostly C's and D's again. I played varsity for the basketball team, so I don't know how that worked, but I guess I could still play. My 10th grade year, after school was over, after the year was out, I started breaking down crying on my knees to my mom. I didn't want to go there anymore. It was because I was getting a lot of trouble with this fighting arguments. I didn't feel like I was getting a fair opportunity. I wasn't getting what I deserved just from racism, from just the teachers in general. I felt like I was stupid. I wasn't getting where I wanted to be. So, summertime, I went to Mexico to visit my family. I came back, and my mom had a brochure sitting on my bed called El Colegio Charter School. I was like, what's this about? So she explained to me that it's just about I can do what I want to do independently. I'm an independent worker. That's what I love to do. I like doing things for myself. So I feel better about that. So I went there. I went to go check it out. And I've seen that it was based on a lot of art, too. I like to paint. I like to just do a lot of things with my hands, like handwork. And so I checked it out. I said, this is school for me because I can speak Spanish, speak English, do whatever I want to do, as long as it's structured, of course, and approved by the teachers. And just, I felt like it was going to be culturally diverse, too, which is what I like, too. So I went there. Everything was cool. I liked it a lot. It changed me a lot. Like, I think I'm staying out of trouble. I'm going to school. I'm not trying to get out of not going to school. Basically, my mom had to beg for me to come home from school. And then the only problem that I don't like about that is that I'm not able to play basketball because they don't have a basketball team. But it doesn't keep me from just playing basketball from the YWCA, which is where we use our gym. And so I don't know what else to say. Oh yeah, okay. I have a couple stories, sorry. My boyfriend just got out of JDC. And he needed to go to court for her. He needed to go to school. The court ordered him to, and I said, come to this school. And he's a little, I guess you can consider him to be a little bad boy in a way, but coming to the school changed him a lot, too. He's been staying out of trouble, been going to school, and that's what he needs to be doing. He wasn't very smart either. And now, since I've seen his grades, and I push him, too, and so did the teachers also. I call him a smart boy because he's getting better grades than I am. Let's see. What else was I going to say? I kind of forgot. I don't know, that's basically it.
Okay. Well, ladies, thank you all three for your testimony. Do you have any questions? For the students who are here, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all three for wonderful testimony. I've been here a number of years, and I still kind of panic when I have to testify in front of my own colleagues when I present bills, so you've done a terrific job. I'm interested in hearing from all of you about what, if any, plans you have in terms of college beyond where you're at currently. And maybe even a little bit about, say a little bit about what it is that you're doing now that you think is helping you to be able to realize a college dream if, in fact, you have one.
How about a quick Amelia?
Okay, I'll begin. Well, right now I'm a 12th grader at El Colegio. I'm on track as far as graduation. I'll be graduating in June.
I'm not exactly sure where I want to go to college yet, but I know what I want to become. I'd like to become a child psychologist. Right now, in order to like make sure that's what I want to do in my life, I'm going to be studying for my senior project. I'm going to be going to Minneapolis junior high schools and possibly high schools too, in Minneapolis close to my school. I'm going to be starting a girls group about teenagers and their pressure in life, like pregnancy, drugs, getting out of troubles, the problems they're going to have in life that I've been through personally, just because that's why I want to help younger students or younger teenagers and like free adults, I don't know how to say it, just with the problems in life and how to overcome them, and for them to realize that even though you get in a lot of trouble or have a lot of problems in life, there's always a way to work through them and to still succeed in life.
Well, since I'm only in elementary school, I've got a while to go to college, but I don't really know what I want to be yet, but now is as good a time as any to plan. So I don't really have any plans for college yet. I'm still thinking.
Thank you, Representative. Before I went to PCA, I didn't think I was ever going to go to college. I thought that I was going to get my GED. Well, at that point, I could get it when I was 16, but now I can't know. But anyway... and I never thought I'd go to college, but now I'll be graduating early. I'm a senior right now, but I'll be graduating next month. And I plan to go to Normandale for their nursing program and then to VU for their bachelor's program and eventually their midwife program. So, plan to be a midwife.
Are there any other questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Biskins. Any one of you, what would you recommend to us as policymakers, as lawmakers, changes to make things better in your particular school environments? Maybe start with Danielle in the alternative. What could we do a better job at, or what could we help your school from which you came know how to track you? Because I've taught in alternative programs and know that sometimes there's a great deal of confusion between the high school you transfer from to the alternative school. So give us some suggestions.
Thank you, Representative. I feel, at least at Union Prairie High School, it's very hard to keep track of all students. I mean, there's almost 4,000 students in that school. It's very hard to keep track of them all. Which, I mean, really isn't good for us for some of us because we do get lost in the system. I personally got kicked out of my high school because I didn't go to class. So, that's why I attend PCA. But basically, back to what your question was, I think there's a cap on how many classes a student can take. In a year, they can only take on, I think it's 1.2 right now, so only a full workload plus 3 more credits. So, and it used to be 1.5, and before that it was 2, so they could take on a double workload in order to graduate on time. So basically, I think that we need to instill, to raise the cap a little bit more, at least back to 1.5, because some students won't graduate until they're 21, and then that's the age cutoff, and so then there's that. Too, that they can't graduate after 21. They have to go get their GED. So that's definitely a big thing.
Emily?
Well, I can't really think of anything, but honestly, I have nothing to say.
Amelia?
I guess just, like, our school, it offers us everything we really need, but it doesn't offer everything that we want. Like, we want a lot of things that we... Like, we always work a way to get around it and chance to fulfill it. I guess it's because our money's tight on budget-wise and stuff. And we have, like, I think 85 students that go to our school, and they all come from all over the Twin Cities. Fortunately, I only live about 5 minutes from my school. So we take metro buses for you know what I mean. But we take them everywhere, and it's hard for a lot of our students. Don't come till like 10. Some of our students don't come till after lunchtime, and that affects them it's because of the buses that they take here. I guess to just be able to get money for being able to have a bus or get school buses and stuff to help students get here.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Biskins. Amelia, how about sports? You mentioned that you had played basketball at your previous school, and the charter school you cannot. What are your ideas there to
make it
easier for you and better?
Recently, we tried to group up with another charter school, and there's another Minneapolis Transit School, another charter school. We tried grouping with them, but things just didn't really work out because I don't know who drew the part on that one. But it's not like we haven't tried; it's just that it's not working out. And our school, we don't have enough basketball players that want to play for girls. My first year I went there, which was my 11th year, I was going to play for the boys. I was going to be the only girl playing with the guys' team. But we failed to do our, some of the students didn't feel like, what's it called, doing fundraisers and stuff. But getting money to do that would be awesome. Because, for me, I love it. I love playing sports. And but just noticed that it didn't keep me from doing what I need to do in order to graduate. It's not a necessity, it's just a thing that I would love to do.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
Chairperson Biskins. I remembered this time. some of the alternative students who were here last week at the Capitol were visiting about some of the needs, and one of the things that they really stressed was they would like to extend the age from 21 to 23 to give some students additional time to finish their credits, their high school credits, rather than being cut off and going into a GED program, which they didn't feel was as acceptable. And I wonder if you agreed with that, if you thought that was a good idea. And then also, from Eden Prairie, a lot of the school systems have the alternative learning centers. Is yours a charter school or part of the school system?
Danielle?
Thank you, Representative. We are mostly project-based, but I mean, we do comply with Minnesota standards, obviously, but all our school basically services from all around the Twin Cities. I mean, we have St. Louis Park, Minnetonka, Edina, Hopkins, Eden Prairie. Basically, everybody in the surrounding area that can actually get to our school can come to our school. So it's not based out of the Eden Prairie High School system. So,
Representative, when you graduate, do your credits graduate from Eden Prairie High School?
Yes, they do transfer.
Okay, yep. And then going on to the age of 23.
I think, in my opinion, I think that even having an 18-year-old and a 14-year-old in the same high school is not right. I think it should be from 10th to 12th grade as opposed from 9th to 12th grade. And then, then if you have super seniors, that's what we call them, who are 19 and 20 years old going into high school with 14-year-olds, for one, I don't think that's right, but then even raising that age even higher to 23, I mean, it would just cause so much problems, in my opinion. I mean, I think it's great if you want to raise it to 23 so that they can have their own school maybe to go to, you know, between, you know, 19 and 23 or, you know, something like that. But I understand funding's low. But having a 23-year-old and a 14-year-old in the same school, not right, in my opinion.
Considering the fact that I don't know much about high school credits and things, I would say that I agree with her. I agree that they should have a separate school for adults, or you can consider them adults going back to high school.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, I disagree. My brother, he's 20 years old right now. He's attending to the same school I do. He will be 21. I think the only reason he was held back was because he did some time in jail, so that kept him back. I think that we should give everybody the same equal opportunities, and if you want to raise that by 23, I think that would be great, because there's some people that have family problems, there's problems in general that are keeping them from succeeding what they want to become. You know, the students or the people that are at a younger age that, you know, have trouble with them, they don't really realize that a charter school might be able to help them, so they kind of just blow everything out and don't even want to get their GED or anything, you know. And so they basically just drop out. And if they decide to come back, charter school would be a good school for them to go to, just because they can work at a different opportunity then.
like I said, I think everybody deserves an equal opportunity. And rather, I mean, having a 14-year-old and 23-year-old in the same school, I mean, it's, what's the difference, really? Because your 14-year-old is not going to be trying to... I understand it has some problems, but I'm sure it won't have that many.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amelia, I want to ask you something because you identified something that I know is, because I know a little bit about your school, and I know that this is important for many of the students. So you talked about your own cultural background and identity, and it sounds to me like at your present school that you found something that is accepting and recognizing who you are in terms of how you identify culturally. How important is that? How important is that in terms of your previous experiences? Would that have made a difference if you had a similar kind of if there were similar kind of dynamics happening in your previous schools? Would that have helped? Just trying to get a handle around this because we have a growing student of color population throughout the entire state. And when I talk to many young people, this issue often comes up, the issue of perhaps feeling alienated or isolated or not understood or recognized or acknowledged. And so I just want to give you a little opportunity to say a little bit more about that and how important you think that is.
Okay. Amelia.
Okay, well, yeah, my school gave me a really good opportunity to speak Spanish and English. Most of our teachers, not all of our teachers, but most of them, when we are in a classroom, they have the ability to speak English and Spanish. If they can't handle the pressure, they have one of the students translate in Spanish for them. Also, when I came to school, it felt like it completed me. I felt okay. I felt welcome. I felt like I was appreciated because I was a little bit different than some students because I was Mexican, and I'm half Mexican and half white. This school gave me an opportunity to build some confidence in myself. I'm a very confident young lady as it is, but this gave me some more confidence. And just so it gave me an opportunity to explore myself and where my family came from and just how powerful, and you're right that we are a growing population, and that's a good thing. It gives us an opportunity. When I went to St. Louis Park, I felt as if everybody was separate in their own little group. We had Caucasians, we had Mr. Hispanic, we had Somalians, we had Guyanese, we had a whole bunch of different little groups, and I didn't feel like that was right. And when I came to my school, it was very diverse. We're only missing a couple races, but not they're welcome. It's just they haven't found their school, or they just don't want. It's not the right school for them. The school, I think, is a very good opportunity for just Hispanic students in general because, if they go to a regular high school, they have, I think it's called DSL programs, but those aren't always good. I feel like they're cutting them off from the rest of the school because this school, you can speak to anybody, and they have the same. You have the ability to take the same classes, and we'll work with you in order to make sure you understand what's going on in the classes.
Ladies, I want to thank you all for your testimony, your courage, and I think you did a fabulous job. So thank you for being here. This time we do have a teacher who is here. It's in a public school choice program. Right? Miss Carrie Bakken. Right? Carrie, would you introduce yourself to the committee and share with us your experiences?
Yeah, my name is Carrie Bakken. Thank you, Representative Chair Mark Diskin. My name is Gary Bakken, and I have been teaching at Avalon Charter School. And I thank you so much for your visit this week. It was great. It was a great opportunity for us to talk about our school and kind of regenerate or and get excited about it again, which we often do. I've taught in an alternative setting as well. I taught at Plymouth Youth Center in North Minneapolis for 3 years, and then I was part of the startup team to start Avalon Charter School. I guess it's my fourth year. I love my job. I absolutely love it. I love it for three primary reasons: that the students are empowered, that the teachers are empowered, and that I get to learn a lot of different things. I don't think I would be as thrilled to teach in a public high school, a traditional public high school, where a social studies teacher would see 200 students and have the same lesson over and over and over again. I get to learn about science. I get to learn about building motorcycles. I get to learn about anything that the students can come up with, I get to learn about. One other really exciting piece of Avalon is that we have a democratic school in a very pure sense. We have students who can participate in making changes at Avalon, so that's how they're empowered. They're empowered through the choice of curriculum that they want to pursue, but they're also empowered because we have a Congress that actually can make decisions. They've rewritten our dress code policy. They're in the process of rewriting our attendance policy because they're frustrated by students who are not attending regularly, which isn't a large number of them, but it's some of them, and they're so offended that somebody wouldn't want to come every day. So they're going to help us have a more strict attendance policy. And we have an Avalon Constitution, which gives them authority to help us create policy. I was I helped the students design the Avalon Constitution the first year that we started, and we were trying to figure out how to be democratic. We're a flat management type of school where the teachers run the school. We don't have a principal. We all make decisions together, and so we wanted to teach the students how to do that as well. So we came up with this constitution, and we, in the process, they learned about the U.S. Constitution and helped model, use that model to create their own constitution. So we have the three branches of government, the legislative, executive, and judicial. Our executive branch is the teachers, the advisors. The legislative branch is the students. And our judicial branch is a system of restorative justice and peer mediation and circle. So I think what's most exciting is the students feel that they know when they come into our school that they can make change. And I'm watching, you know, a new group of students come in and realize that, and that's exciting. Because I think the first reaction is, you're the teacher and I'm the student, and we're not supposed to have a relationship or a dialogue. I'm supposed to discipline them. But at our school, that's not the case. And they start to kind of let their guard down, and they start to realize, oh, if I think this isn't a good policy, then I can help change it, or I can have a voice in that. So I love that. As a teacher, I love being a part of the administration. I like looking at the budget and realizing, well, maybe it's not a good year for us to get raises. Maybe we need to cut back on this. Maybe we can't give family benefits, but I like having that that decision be mine and not somebody else's. I take care of all the human resources paperwork, so I helped design our pay scale and create a flexibility within that. I guess I can't tell you how much I love all aspects of my job. I think what is important to convey to you and what I would ask you to do is create policy that helps sustain a small learning community. I like teaching an alternative school for that same reason as well. I love the small learning community. It is very difficult when we don't have enough staff to have a physical education teacher, a health teacher, and all the varying licensure requirements that the No Child Left Behind is kind of demanding now. And so we have a lot of variances. We have things to work that out, but I would hope that you could create policy that would allow small learning communities to continue. Because if we had to all be licensed in every area that we taught, it would make it very difficult. All be licensed in every area that we taught, it would make it very difficult for us. I mean, a traditional licensure. We are licensed. We have variances. But I think that's the really important thing that we need. The other thing we need is to feel that this is a sustainable program. I think school choice is wonderful for all the reasons that you heard. And I think the fear is, oh, will we exist in 10 years? Will we exist in 20 years? Because will policy change? Will attitudes change? And then we won't be able to exist anymore. And I think you guys have heard how important these choices are to students. And I think they make our public school system better overall. I currently live in Minneapolis, and I plan on living there, and I plan on raising my children in Minneapolis. So I would no way want to hurt Minneapolis public schools by creating these choices to take away students. I know that's kind of the fear, but I think it helps to make Minneapolis public schools better, to create innovation and force innovation in our public school system. So, I guess.
Ms. Bonkin, can you describe your day as an educator? I've been a public school educator for 21 years now, 10 years as a classroom teacher, and I know what that kind of day looks like. What's your day look like?
Our day is, it's a lot more flexible, I guess, but it starts off, we have a schedule. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry. I'm learning the formalities. Okay, our day begins with an advisory time where we connect as a group. I'm responsible for 18 students' education, and I've had most of them now for the 4 years, and 11 of my students will be graduating this year out of the 18, and that's been really, really fun to watch their development. And so we begin with an advisory time, and they're really comfortable with each other, and they know each other, and we have a time to connect and make announcements. They check in. We have fun check-in questions. Then everybody does math at the same time. And one of the things that we're working on, because it's not perfect, but we all teach math. And so it's fun for me to learn Algebra 1 again, but I might not be the best Algebra 1 teacher, but we have a lot of resources with the students working independently, and they are able to get the resources we need, and we're continuing to work on our math program. That is one of our weaknesses. But I enjoy it. I love, doing the mental gymnastics of Algebra 1, and I've heard it's going to stave off Alzheimer's later on. So, so I hope so. Then we all teach math, and then we go on to have open time where we teach seminars. I only teach on Tuesdays and Thursdays in a formal class. But the rest of the day, I work with kids one-on-one on their projects and help them design projects, help them finalize projects, help them think up projects. And we have a silent reading time where we connect again as an advisory and they just read quietly. This is really nice time of the day. And then, again, at the end of the day is real project time and seminar time. I advise Congress, so that takes up another part of my day, but I really enjoy it. I love that I learn something new every day. I won't be frustrated in 20 years saying, well, I've looked at this material over and over again. It's not like that.
Representative Norness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You were talking about kind of how it's administered, your school, and I did have a chance to tour. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that. I'm just curious, do you have a business manager then that takes care of the finances? Is that a staff person or some? How is that handled?
Ms. Spock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The business manager, we all started with a very flat management, and so we all divided up the roles, and our business manager was our chemistry teacher. It became too overwhelming to teach chemistry, be an advisor, and to also take care of the budget and the finance. So after last year, we gave him more time to be the business manager, and he still teaches chemistry. What's unique about our school is that, and then we also have a lead teacher who doesn't teach in the classroom anymore. She was a biology teacher. She has some administrative experience from before, and so she has taken on that role as lead advisor, where she deals with a lot of the day-to-day stuff. What makes it flat is that her opinion, I guess it's flat decision-making, where she signs off as the superintendent. She's responsible for some day-to-day paperwork that I'm not responsible for, but her opinion is treated equally as the other staff. But she also connects with the peer mediators. So every single position in our school has a role connected to the students, too.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Bakken, is that right? A couple questions. Quickly, who's the sponsor of Avalon?
Ms. Bakken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hamelin University is our sponsor, so we work with them closely.
And then, Mr. Chair, Ms. Bakken, so is there a so is that a close relationship in terms of guidance and advice and continuous improvement ideas, or are you basically doing that with your own staff and sort of just reporting to Hamelin?
Ms. Bakken.
I think it's more of the latter now that we're established. We have annual reports, and we connect with them about what our goals, you know, they review our goals and those kinds of things. But initially, there was more need for that sponsor relationship, and we have some of the professors are still connected very much to our school, and so they come and, you know, will advise on projects. And so I think there's some closeness there, but I think it's the need for the kind of initial stuff is we're more established now. We don't need it as much.
And then,
Representative Mariani.
Chair, just on a slightly different, it sounds like the size of the school is important in your mind. We have a number of high schools in the, particularly the metro area, that are just huge. And my guess is that the size of your high school is probably closer to some rural high schools, although I know we have pretty big rural high schools as well. But it also sounds like personal relationships with the students are important, and I'm struck by the notion that the two may not necessarily need to exist in order for one. In other words, is it possible in your mind, you know, because for us to downsize high schools, it's just not going to happen, I don't think. And if that's the case, do you think your practices in terms of building personal relationships with students the way you've done it, do you think that's transferable even to large high schools? Or is it just not possible because you really got to get your arms around the size?
Ms. Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative. Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. I think if you were going to transfer to a big school setting, you'd have to have some sort of cohort where you or advisory that you would follow those kids along and maybe check in with them somehow. Because I think that's what's been so satisfying is watching the growth. And I have tracked my 18 students almost the whole 4 years. I think it possibly could be. The thing that is nice, though, is that every single teacher in our school knows every student. And so, you know, if there's a problem in one of my classes, I can go to the other advisor and say, what's going on with this particular student? Or, you know, she doesn't seem that engaged. What's happening? And I think we all can work together because we know this 125 students, and we all say hello to them. We all comment on their behavior if it's inappropriate. We all comment on their achievements. We celebrate those. So I think big schools offer a lot of opportunities that we can't, and I don't think they should not exist. I just think we provide something for students who are looking for a smaller setting.
Mr. Chair, just one last question.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you ever get opportunities to talk with your colleagues in bigger schools about your practices? And if not, would you like to be able to do that, I guess, would be the other question.
Ms. Parkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative. I absolutely would love to do that. I haven't. I think one thing that I would love to do, you know, I have friends who have taught in public schools, but we haven't really sat down and hashed that out. But I think something that could transfer to other schools that I would love to work on with other bigger schools is this constitution piece and the student empowerment, so that student council doesn't become just a party planning organization. It becomes, well, are we frustrated with this? I think I'm deeply interested in citizenship because I went to law school, I worked in juvenile justice, graduated from law school, and I love issues of civics. But I particularly want to empower citizens, and I think as citizens, as even as adults, we all feel like, well, maybe that's somebody else's job, or maybe that's somebody else's role, or what does my vote matter? How else can I get involved? Nobody listens to me. And I think if you start to learn that in high school, that people will listen if you state your opinion or are active, I think that it can be a really powerful thing. So I would love to transfer that to a bigger public setting.
Thank you.
Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many subjects do you teach? And you said they all do math at the same time. Well, you do Algebra 1, apparently.
Yeah.
Who does Algebra 2 and pre-calculus or calculus? Or, and how's that work? And I'd love to go just tutor for a while. I taught math for a long time.
Oh.
And it'd be fun just to go sit there and do problems with the kids and see what's going on. But
Ms. Park,
how's that work?
We would love to have you. It would be great.
You're hired.
And
yeah.
If I may, Ms. Falk and Representative Wardlow, you won't get lost going to this one. It's right down the road.
Yeah.
Who said I got lost to the last one?
No, I mean, it seems to be a common theme in site visits, Ms. Falk.
We were excellent. We had Lisa.
Oh, right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative. We actually have our math teacher. We have a math teacher on site, and he teaches pre-calculus and algebra too. So those are the more difficult, I think harder to remember subjects from those high school days. But then our language arts teacher, he has learned Algebra 2 and he's teaching it. Another social studies teacher teaches geometry. Our science teachers pitch in and they teach geometry and Algebra 2. So, and then what we do also have is parent volunteers who come in and tutor kids. Each student works individually, and it's a computer-generated program, and if this doesn't work for the student, they find their own program that does, and we can work with them on that. And so each student, there's an Algebra 1 room and a geometry, actually two geometry rooms and two Algebra 2 rooms, and so they go to those rooms, and they work on their math individually, and ask each other for help, ask the teacher for help, and ask parent volunteers or House of Representatives, volunteers, whoever wants to be here now. We like to bring in people to do that one-on-one stuff, too.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Bakken, you've taught in both the alternative and the charter setting. Could you just, in a nutshell, give us the similarities and the differences, maybe in licensure requirements, in how you had to structure your preparation to meet the needs of the students?
Ms. Bakken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Representative. Yes, I taught at Plymouth Youth Center in North Minneapolis, and I was able to teach there without a license as long as I was working towards my licensure. So that's what I did right after. I'd worked in juvenile justice, so I was very interested in that population, and I still am. I loved it. I think one thing that I would have loved to have done, I think, is basically what I'm doing now is being more empowered in a flat management style of as an organization. So that's the difference there. I think the students were wonderful. I think the students come to the alternative school in some ways in the same way that we get the students to the charter school. It's not meeting, the mainstream public education has not met their needs. The difference would be in an alternative setting, I saw a lot more kids with severe problems in their backgrounds, just basic needs in their lives not being met, and so that was a challenge. I think this feeling of powerlessness is more pervasive maybe in an alternative school, and I think the close relationships and the small setting helps to bring that feeling that they are powerful and that they can have their education. I think the biggest difference would probably organizationally. It was a pretty traditional model in my other alternative school.
Representative Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Bakken, how did you accomplish your licensure? What was your trail?
Okay.
Ms. Bakken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Erickson. I graduated from law school, realized I wanted to be a teacher. I love students, like kids. While I started teaching at PUIC, I went to a licensure program at St. Thomas, and they were one of the only ones who had the nighttime re-licensure program or new licensure program while you could get a master's at the same time.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Bakken. I'm impressed with what I see happening at your school and having visited there yet this week. One of the things I found most interesting in hearing your story was how you go about determining teacher compensation. And you've talked about empowerment of students, but you have an example of empowerment of teachers as well. Could you share with the group how you go about determining teacher compensation?
Ms. Bakken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Representative Lanning. We do it by, we designed this. We designed a traditional pay scale, but it's a little more like 1 to 3 years of experience, and we kind of lumped pay together. And it's a little bit less than probably the traditional public school, but it's still competitive. But we have a very extensive personnel review process. So the way that we're compensated is most everybody is paid within this kind of scale, but it's part of a very extensive personnel process where we start this actually in February, so we'll start it this month, where we observe each other, we pair up in teams, we evaluate every single person on the staff, we come together and then analyze, you know, what areas can I improve on, and then they analyze and you get feedback on both levels, what's going well. So you go through this extensive process, and then you kind of you negotiate your salary. We're pretty consistent with staying in this general framework of, and we honor years of experience and we honor education level. But ways that we have in the past, we have given people a little bit higher salary if they've gone above and beyond and done extraordinary work. And our traditional grid doesn't honor that. Like we have one extraordinary staff member, but she doesn't have a master's degree. So we gave her a little bit more within a certain range to honor her extraordinary work. The other way we're compensated for our work is through stipends. So by doing the human resources paperwork and payroll and those kinds of things, I don't do payroll, but I set it up with somebody else to do payroll, and I take care of the numbers and those kinds of things. I get a small stipend for that. So we're paid for our additional administrative work as well as for our school work as advisor.
Representative Thorne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And some of your answers prompted a few other questions, but real quickly, you said about 125 students, and what is your number of teachers, and what's the ratio of teachers to students?
Ms. Bakken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative. We have eight advisors who actually have advisories, and I job share with another advisor. So we have seven advisories, but we have eight advisors. And we have a special ed teacher, two EAs, an office manager, and then the business manager and the administrative.
Okay.
So... I can count those up again. But a little over 10 or 11 or something like that.
Representative Thorne.
Thank you, and that helps. A question of curiosity, because you mentioned there was a small pool of students that did have some attendance difficulties, and I'm not surprised. Have you had any kids who did not flourish under the project-based learning model? I mean, have you had some who said, this isn't a fit for me either?
Ms. Bakken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative. Yes, absolutely. And we do try to encourage students to stick it out for a period of at least a half a year or longer. But we do have students, it takes a tremendous amount of motivation to design a project and finish the project and meet your deadlines and those kinds of things. One of the representatives, and he's not here right now, but he spoke to our students about what he noticed in the traditional public schools, that students don't know what they even want to study. And we've had that, and that's why we let students give them about 6 months, try to figure out, okay, I know it's hard to have somebody ask you, what do you want to study? Because it's not been something that you've learned how to do. And then I think the motivation it requires is too much.
And then, Mr. Chair, if I could
send
one more question. And the quick background is there were some folks here on charter schools earlier in the session, and several of them associated with Hamlin. I'm saying it ahead of time. It's not a loaded or set up question. I'm just curious. They had some discussion, and first of all, is the majority of your board then teachers?
Mm-hmm.
And they were I think pondering whether that was still the best setup or if they should switch to a different mix. Do you have any insight on that? Would you say it's worked okay for you, or should we change it, or
Ms. Falken?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative. Yes, I think we are in the current, we're having a debate about that right now. We're really wondering if it's the best use of our board. I think I understand, I mean, I know why it started that way. I think it's really important for teachers to be in charge initially. I think what's happened, though, is because we are in charge of running the school and because we're in charge of the day-to-day life of the school, it's very difficult then to be motivated to do, and then take on a board role as well. And I think it is kind of hindering us. I think people are really excited, outside parents and outside community members are excited about our program, that I think we could easily get rid of that teacher majority and we would have a more effective board. I would like to see it go that direction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hammer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Martin, I guess I don't have as much of a question as maybe some thoughts and observations. You can tell by the questions from all the members, it's a fascination, I think, that we have in this place when we're talking about policy. I got to start out by complimenting you, Mr. Chair, on giving us the opportunity to go out to these different schools and seeing the charter schools. I think it kind of lends itself to the fascination that we have in this place with large versus small. You know, depending on our orientation, depending on where we come from, my background being a rural Minnesota, greater Minnesota, as opposed to lesser Minnesota, Mr. Chair. I couldn't resist that.
I knew that was coming.
I couldn't resist that. But I think depending on our perspective, there's this fascination. I have a fascination. I've had a chance to go and visit some of the larger schools and seeing some of the opportunities that affords to kids in terms of the different classes and different types of facilities that they have and all that kind of stuff. And then when I'm back home and thinking about where my children go and where I went to school, and when I see the charter schools, and I'm thinking, but this is about community. It's about, teachers doing multiple things, and I get a chance to see other kids as well as, we've got teachers in our school that taught me, maybe not so much anymore, but they go generations, and it's about community.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little more limited in choices in terms of some of the class offerings. Quite frankly, some of the expertise in some of our teachers. You talked about teaching across disciplines and maybe learning as you go and staying maybe ahead of the kids a little bit as you're teaching them, and as opposed to being large enough that you get to specialize in all the different areas. And I guess it's more of a comment. I just find it fascinating, that our fascination with, looking on the other side of the fence, so to speak. And I think it's really a nice opportunity to hear you come and talk about the things that you like. I'm sure you have some things that you would covet in maybe some of the larger places. It'd be nice if we had those things, but they're all trade-offs. I think in terms of community, again, with kids being inclusive, we have graduation rates 90-95%, and the half dozen kids or whatever that don't graduate, why, and you try to deal with those. And so it's very interesting to me to hear about some of the graduation rates and that sort of thing. I think kids having the opportunity to be involved in the schools that I'm from, if you decide to go out for basketball, you're on the team.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't want to, you're not on the team. And that's just the way it is. We have some tryouts now, but, you know, music programs, we have 60-70% of our entire student body in the music programs. So they see teachers across, you know, with our teaching staffs that aren't so big, most of those teachers are coaching something and they have the same kids throughout. So there really is a sense of community. And again, then you look at the larger schools and think, yeah, but they have this and they have that. They have five languages to choose from and they have shops and they have... So I it's more of a comment, I guess. I got, you know, the more you talked and the different things you covered kind of made my mind start to race in terms of all these different areas, and I just felt like I had to comment and compliment the chair again and thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And that compliment will get you over the hump of that comment. Representative Carlson.
Chairman, I had the chance, Spock, to visit your school, and I had a question when we were meeting with some of the staff that I didn't get to because we broke up into the circles. But when we had the general discussion, you were one of the other teachers talked about a number of students that had been accepted at various colleges and universities. And the question I had that I didn't get to the other morning was how you handle things like foreign languages. For example, a lot of our colleges and universities require a foreign language, or if they enroll you, then you're considered to be deficient and you would have to take so many credits that wouldn't necessarily even count for your degree in certain circumstances to make that up. And I'm just using foreign languages as an example. There are other questions that might come up in math and so on. And so just in a general way, how do you respond to those kinds of needs for your college students?
Ms. Botkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative. Yeah, we have, specifically the languages, we started off offering, we contracted with people part-time. We had Japanese, French, German, Latin, and we had all these languages, and it just became too difficult to pay for all these different languages. So we're narrowing it down, and we're going to offer Spanish. And we have a full-time Spanish teacher, and that's the area that we went to because we realized we can't be everything to everybody. What we do to really, I think, prepare students for college and those kind of create those opportunities for, you know, advanced calculus or whatever is we have a lot of students doing PSEO, quite a few number. And right now I actually have a student. She's earned almost 2 years' worth of credit towards college already. And at good schools like Hamline and St. Kate's, and so she's doing really well, and she's taking advanced economics already. So she's had a tremendous amount of success there. The other college prep part of our school, which I think we do a very good job of, is teaching students how to manage their time. With only having seminars, you know, twice a week, three times a week, and very consistent with the college schedule, they have to figure out how to be productive during their downtime. We've had students now, this was our first year of having students who went to college, and they're in college now, and they said, well, college is a lot easier than doing your senior project at Avalon. And they are watching their friends who haven't had that unstructured time really having a difficult time with it and how to budget and manage your time. So I think that's what I would tell parents of how we do that college prep piece. The other thing is we have lots of opportunities that they can take in the community. We have students going to the Northern Clay Center. We have, if there's something, music or drama, we have a lot of students participating in theater in the community. So we have a lot of, we figure out ways to meet their needs, I think, for those opportunities as well.
Members, we're going to end testimony right there. We have a few announcements, so before you run off, but thank you, Ms. Botkin. I appreciate your testimony and for you being with us today. Members, in your packet is the minutes. If you could pull those out and look those over, and while you are, some of you noted on the agenda that the February 15th meeting is canceled. Members, as you're aware, we do meet after session on the 14th, on Monday the 14th, we meet in joint committee with the Senate Education Committees to go through the region selection process. Those of you, along with me, who have been involved in this before know that it probably takes more than 10 minutes, and we might be hanging around for a while, all right? And the 14th also being Valentine's Day, a few of us might have some amorous encounters afterwards yet, all right? So we'll be canceling the 8:15 Tuesday morning meeting, all right? And our next meeting then will be on Thursday, the 17th, at which time we've invited the Erie Childhood Caucus, the Mental Health Caucus, and the Board of Teaching all to come before the committee to have discussions. We've looked over the minutes. Is there a motion to approve? Representative Carlson moves to approve. Any additions or subtractions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Representative Dorn.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, members. I was just going to add a quick plug. I attended the Capitol Forum series last night, and I know a lot of us had schedule conflicts. I certainly would hope people could, you know, would take a look at that. I thought it was very interesting. It was another piece of the story, really, what's happening in some of those large public school districts. And they were taping, and I don't know if that tape is available, but it really struck me that part of what they were telling the story of was how some large districts are achieving community within those large structures. Two comments just to whet your appetite that I found really fascinating. One is in, I believe it was in Seattle, they went from having principals trying to encourage, explain to special ed kids why this was not a school for them because of their high cost, to trying to attract the high-cost special ed kids. That's quite a shocking turnaround. And another one I thought was, I believe it was in Edmonton, where the schools were deteriorating, people were flocking to other choices, and I think he said that now there are no private school even options in Edmonton because of what they've done in terms of the mainstream. So the tape, I thought, would be worth seeing at some point if members are interested, but if the next two are as good as this one on education, I would say I try to get it on your calendars.
Thank you. To this issue, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, was there, and I found it very interesting. But what was really most interesting is I drove over there, found my way there, parked, and on the way back, I asked Representative Dorn to ride with me, and he wouldn't.
Members, this meeting's adjourned.